Hi guys, this is Keith Manzi with Dimes on Duval, presented by Nerdy Nuts. I'm here with Skylar Chase, and we are recording our third episode of the year 2024. Skylar, how are you, buddy?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, and you know, we talked off air right before this about how we have not recorded anything this year, and I didn't really think about it until I actually went through the episodes list, and we have recorded two episodes this year, one in January and one in May, and that May one was talking about the Magic losing Game 7 and some of the off-season acquisitions by the Jaguars, so... it's great.
This is probably the first one I'm on.
let me see here, because I know one of them, seasons end. Yeah, it says Mike and Keith, and Magic lose guest game 7. Mike and Keith. So maybe this might be the first one for you for the year. I mean, it's been a crazy year. Mike can't join us today. He will be on the next episode. I promise that. But. As we know, or as you might not know, Mike got married over the summer, so we are very proud of him for that. I got engaged back in May, and, you know, it's just been a cluster of just busyness slash, oh, it's summertime, do we really have a lot to talk about? We probably could have manufactured some episodes, especially between January and May. That's on us, but after May... I don't know if you agree with me, but I think it's like, oh, well, it's summer. Jags aren't really doing anything crazy that we need to be, you know, commenting on. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're just not ones to have time to just, like, go out and make little blurts about every pickup. Obviously, we probably should have done something about the draft. I know we wanted to, but, you know, life gets in the way, of course, but... Yeah, I got more freedom at work now because we have a new employee there that's able to help me have more free time. So I actually don't have to go into work until 3 o'clock on Saturdays, where I used to work 12 to 10 on Saturdays. So, and then I have an extra day off. So that should open up some availability for all of us to record what we love to talk about.
Yeah, we're definitely going to take advantage of that. I'm hoping... And Skylar and I did discuss this before the show. We're thinking Tuesday nights will be our night to record from here on out. Yet to be determined. Yes, Mike, if you're listening, we haven't talked to you about it yet. But it seems like it's the best option because with you being off, Skylar, that just would really open it up for us. But we got a big show. You know, we're going to obviously talk about the most important thing that we always talk about on the show, the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're going to touch on the Olympics here in just a second. And then we're going to end with everyone's favorite topic of discussion, NASCAR.
It's just us two.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Scott will probably enjoy it. But yeah, everyone else will probably turn us off by then. But without further ado, let's jump in. You ready?
Yeah, let's get it.
Okay, so first things first, the Olympics just concluded. The... highlight of everything, in my opinion, was the basketball. The USA men's basketball winning gold. That final game against France was just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think basketball, it's not like the main sport for the Olympics, obviously, but when it comes to Americans, that's the sport we love to watch because it seems to be like one we can typically dominate. Mm-hmm. And in the Olympics, you don't typically see domination, you know, track, all that. You have athletes from random countries that you probably haven't heard about since high school, but, yeah. You know, when they're all together on the track, they're within seconds, milliseconds of each other. But basketball, you know, you're able to get this divide and truly see how elite some of these athletes are and their field, you know, when it comes to basketball. Of course, it's still a growing sport. You know, I'm not the biggest NBA fan, so I can't remember which commissioners really made the focus on, like, going global with the NBA. But I just remember, you know, when you got Yao Ming introduced into the league, there was obviously popularity in Japan, mm-hmm. for that, and China, and just all of Asia kind of started growing because they played games over there too. And then, you know, just seeing it grow and still to see us dominate in that sport, even though you got that 7-foot freak alien athlete for France, you know, he's just Gumby up there on the court. It's kind of my first time watching him play. I didn't get to watch him too much, but I saw one of the earlier games. I can't remember the matches, but I feel like it was Spain and France, and mm-hmm. he was pretty much dominating in that. So that was fun to watch Wimby. But yeah, no, we had it on at work, and just seeing how the deficit was going, it was like, I'm not sure if we're gonna get this. And I look up and I say, you know, we're up, and Steph does what he does all the time, just puts the dagger in there. So
yes,
good for him to do it on a global scale, even though the finals is probably seen on a global scale, but that's obviously going to be talked about and shown to around the world as well.
I think that's the biggest takeaway, in my opinion. Excuse me. That is the newest version of the shot heard round of the world. I mean, I was standing in the living room with Alisa's cousin and uncle. We're watching on just a little laptop because her grandma was in the other room watching Filipino TV, so we couldn't watch it on the big TV. And, I mean, he hits the first one. I'm talking about in the fourth quarter here. He hits the first one. It's like, oh, yeah, there we go, Steph. Hits the second one. I'm like, oh, he's starting to feel it. The third one, I'm like, man, that was a nice shot, too. The fourth one, we literally were jumping up and down, running around the house. Her whole family are Warriors fans, so they were, you know, obviously super excited already because it was Steph. But I think that's just what brings us all together. As during like the NBA regular season, you know, a lot of these people don't root for Steph or don't root for LeBron or KD or whoever it may be. But since they're on the American team, we are rooting for them here in and here out because we want to win that goal. The only person I wasn't rooting for was Joel Embiid, who was just, you know, ring chasing. But it was just really cool, you know.
Did you have a problem with Jason Tatum not getting any time?
No, I don't really care about that either, to be honest. Don't really care about that, to be honest. Bob Cousy said that it was that Steve Kerr has a vendetta against the Celtics, but Derek White and Drew Holiday played a lot. So don't know where you're coming at with that. I just think that, I mean, Tatum didn't really need to play that much. I mean, Tyrese Haliburton didn't play that much either. Does he have a vendetta against the Pacers? You know, so I don't look too deeply into that. There's only so many minutes in a game. And LeBron wasn't subbing himself out. These are his last Olympics, Steph's last Olympics, KD's last Olympics. I'm sad, you know. I didn't get the dream team. I was too young for all that. But this is, LeBron called it the Avengers. I thought that was kind of corny, but you know, this is the avenged team. You know, we came back after so many people counted us out. The increasingly competitive world now. I mean, France is crazy. Serbia is really good. You know, a lot of these teams are improving steadily while the USA, I wouldn't say is regressing, but kind of staying the same. And especially after this Olympics, 2028 is going to be really interesting, I think. Germany is a big contender. France, big contender. Even Australia is a big contender. So I'm excited to see what comes in the next 4 years and who gets named to the team that wasn't on it this year.
No, but to your point about being able to root on players that you normally don't, it's nice, you know, like, because everyone loves to hate LeBron, but, mm-hmm. you know, LeBron's the best player in the world. Like, there's no doubt about that because he's 40 years old and he still looks like a spring chicken, you know, and it's incredible to see him, like, his that type of athleticism he still contains at his age. But that's also what gets me excited for football because, like you were mentioning, the Pacers have players in there. You know, it would be cool to see a Jaguar represent America for the flag football team in the 28 LA Olympics. So that's one thing we can hopefully look forward to is, you know, seeing that. But regardless of who's on the team, we're going to see probably Pat Mahomes, you know, sling it and just see all these other countries not know what to do because they've never seen this before.
It's so. Going to be really intriguing, especially because we don't know who's going to be out there. Because, yeah, of course, you think Patrick Mahomes first. But is he going to accept it? Is he going to be worried about injury? Are the Chiefs going to allow him to do it? You know, there's always that whole controversy for things. But I would love to see a Jaguar out there. Give me Cam Little out there kicking a 60-yard field goal. I don't know if they kick field goals in flag football, but, you know, we can pretend.
Honestly, I think ETN has the best chance if he's still a Jaguar at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Because of how shitty he is. And, you know, that's crazy to have, like, in a flag football game. You can't grab that flag. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I think of it like the 3-on-3 basketball tournament that they have in the Olympics where we sent out Jimmer Fredette and like a couple other scrubs, and I'm like, oh, we couldn't get anyone better to do this. I know the rules are slightly different, but you know, so I'm intrigued to see how that ends up turning out. I know we're gonna go for the gold though, because we are obviously the powerhouse in football. But speaking of football, let's get into it, man. Jaguars preseason is underway. 1-0 with a win over the Chiefs. Gosh, I wish it was a regular season game. I'd love to be able to say we beat the Chiefs.
I sent my buddy a message. He's a Chiefs fan from Kansas, and I told him we're the first team to beat Kansas City since last regular season.
Yes.
You know, they went undefeated in the postseason, but hey, first team to beat them since last year's regular season. I'll take it.
I'll take it too. A convincing 26-13 victory. A lot to take away. What's the first thing that you saw? I know you said you watched heavily the first quarter. What was the first thing that that caught your eye and said, oh, yeah, this is it. We're going to win this game.
I just thought overall it was just exciting. You know, Parker Washington with the opening return.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. And then just to be able to score, what, 3 plays later? That's what you want to see. It wasn't like they had to convert a third down and then convert another third down and then, you know, go for it on 4th-and-1 near the goal line, like how we had struggles. You know, season we get onto the goal line and can't make it. And just like that's one of the most frustrating things. So to be able to get a great starting field position and then to finish it is always a good sign. Obviously, Kansas City did go down our throat initially, and then we were able to make a stop Kansas City player dropped it, but we'll take that.
Yeah, you gotta take what the game gives you for sure.
But overall, it seemed exciting. Seemed like we got depth at receiver for sure.
Right.
And I'm excited to see all that going down. Like, we no longer have to just rely on Ingram throughout the whole game. We can go all over the field. Gabe Davis is, you know, he made a really good catch up the middle. I would like to have seen him get the feet down for that one sideline catch.
It looked inbounds to me, but I didn't see enough replays to determine it. So,
yeah, it was close, but. You know, it's good that it happened now, at least, and maybe they can work on it, because obviously that was something that happened quite a bit last season where, you know, Trevor put the ball where it needed to be, but the receivers couldn't drag their feet just because, I don't know, they just don't have that experience in those situations.
I don't think we're going to be seeing that this year. I watched too many highlights in the offseason of just mashups of Calvin Ridley dropping the ball so many times or, you know, stepping out of bounds and whatnot. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. And I'll start with the first receiver you mentioned, Parker Washington. Yes, 73-yard return to set us up on the 20-yard line of Kansas City. ETN catches a pass up the middle to score the touchdown, which was great. That was the best play by ETN. The running woes still continue, but I'll get to that in just a second. The next guy, Brian Thomas Jr., made a beautiful grab 41 yards down the field from Beathard, which was just, oh man, so refreshing to see a downhill threat, because he was just sprinting and it looked incredible. He had two targets there. Even Devin Duvernay, you know, somebody who probably no one was thinking about would do anything, had a great diving grab at the in the end zone. That was like 35-yard touchdown itself.
Yeah, the way, like, just to be able to adjust without the defender realizing the ball's falling into place, like, that's one thing, because he did a really good job of just, like, kind of going around and really adjusting his body to where, like, the ball basically just fell into his arms as he was falling, too, and rolling into the end zone. So, like, yeah, and, like, Bezzer took a huge hit on that play.
He
so.
Did. He got popped.
Yeah, that was just I don't know why there's no flag. Because, like, you would think they would want to be extra cautious in the preseason to get players in the habit of not doing that, but...
Yeah, you'd think.
Again, the preseason calls go to the Chiefs' way, like that one fumble from Braswell that got returned. That
yeah.
was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was. That was. Well...
So, I mean, that was a good play, too. And, you know, for that play to be taken away from him, even though it's preseason, that's something that the coaches might look. I mean, he's probably going to make the team, but he, especially since we don't have DB depth right now. But yeah, it's just, he made a great play there. And it's just unfortunate that refs, again, take away because, again, all turnovers and scoring plays are reviewable.
Right. Yet exactly.
You make the call to make it to where a team would have to lose a timeout or a challenge. So.
Yeah, I'm with you on that for sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just that hit on Bethard too. Just the rest need to get better too.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I don't want a whole other season of blaming the rest again.
Please,
that's the reason we didn't make the playoffs.
Anything but that. Mentioning what I said before with the running game, ETN had 4 carries for 3 yards. The touchdown catch was great, but I will mention that we were missing 2 of our starting offensive linemen. Ezra Cleveland and Anton Harrison did not play. So, you know, take that into consideration. We actually had 7 guys out, you know. Hopefully a lot of them will be back. I don't think Dewey Wingard will be back before the start of the season, according to reports. But
our just got activated today.
Yeah, Eric Armstead about an hour ago just got activated off the PUP list, so that'll help with the run up the middle because Pacheco had a nice run early in the game that ticked me off because I just can't stand that guy. And
yeah, we need veteran presence there until those rookies that we drafted back to back develop. So that'll be good for them to take some of the pressure off the rookies, so that way they don't have to be expected to make plays early on in the season.
Absolutely. We did have a couple sacks. I don't even know how to say his name. Ezi Odomiwu had a sack and a half, and Miles Cole had half a sack. Say that again?
That's the one on our team?
Yeah, that guy's on our team. He had a sack and a half, and Miles Cole had half a sack. Yasir Abdullah had a sack. Jonathan Marshall had a sack.
I saw Abdullah get the one. That was when Wentz what scrambled out there.
Yeah, which crazy seeing Ian Book out there for Kansas City, but that Chris Oladokun guy, that guy was kind of fun to watch too. He was pretty good. But Book was the one who got sacked the most, and Wentz got sacked once, which, you know, I don't mind seeing that. I think the last thing I wanted to touch on, too, was the kicking game. Cam Little, 3 for 4, his longest being 47. The only one he missed was, 63-yard field goal, so not really a miss in the grand scheme of things. But did you see his quote today where he said, "Book it, I'm breaking the record this season for longest field goal"?
Oh, man, that's fun to have a kicker with that type of leg. I didn't see the 62-yard attempt, but everyone seemed like it. You know, from what I heard, everyone was talking about still how impressive it was in terms of height.
Yeah, it had the height, but it just didn't have the accuracy. And that's all it was.
Yeah. If we have a Jaguars kicker in the hall or in the record book, that'd be cool. I would like that a lot.
Me too. I'd buy his jersey immediately.
I'm probably gonna get a jersey. I was thinking about naming my fantasy team kick Cam Little and drafted him first overall. I might do it.
You do that. You do that. I do think I will be buying his jersey, though. I think for sure. Like, I really like him.
It's a regular one.
Oh, absolutely. In the throwback, I have to. Those are too beautiful not to buy. Yeah, we didn't even do an episode about that. Gosh, dang.
I know. And the white helmets.
Yes. Quick note just on the white helmets. Look great. Look dumb on the black jersey. That's all I have to say. What about you?
Well, I agree. I wish that they could go pair them with the all white. I thought that was going to be the plan. And the same, like,
right.
It makes no sense that we can't just wear, like, all white seems like an alternate uniform to me. But, so, I mean, I presume they might wear these also in London. I don't know if they announced when they were. I think they said Minnesota's when they're going to actually wear them here.
I think so, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they wore them in London, too, because that's when they usually bust up the black on black, but they might still go with the traditional black helmet.
Do you go black on black with white socks to match the helmet, or do you just go all black and then the helmet?
I mean, I think you just go black, white, black.
Oh, black, white. Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, that would make sense, too.
That would look good. But, no, yeah, it's just NFL needs to lighten up on some of these rules. Like, that's crazy because that would look amazing with the white on white or even white on black. It would just look good with white.
I'm with you. I agree with that. I mean, it's a silly rule. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a helmet color, man. Like, we're not doing anything bad. College football does it. Why can't we do it?
Yeah. Were you expecting any stripes, or did it come out as you expected?
You said stripes?
Yeah, like, did you expect, like, stripes on it or any type of pattern? Or
no, I honestly didn't know what to expect. I saw people in the comments the day before saying, like, it's the white helmet. I'm like, is it just going to be the same thing, but, you know, instead of black, it's white? And I was pleasantly surprised with how it turned out.
I was honestly expecting them to do similar to, like, a Bengals helmet where, like, the Jaguar logo was just the black and white logo because they plaster that everywhere, too.
Right, right. Yeah, that would look really good, too.
And especially if they could wear it with the white. But
right. Well, of course, that has to go into. I'm saying right too much, so I got to stop agreeing with you. let's get into our not-so-good friend Dan Orlovsky's poll, or I don't even know what you call it, rankings that he came out with yesterday, ranking the NFL quarterbacks by trait. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categories, and those are arm strength, ball placement, mechanics, decision-making, pocket presence, rushing ability, and second reaction. Each category has 10 quarterbacks on it. There are a few that have some honorable mentions, and I'm just going to run through the ones that actually mention our quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. The first category of arm strength, Trevor Lawrence is an honorable mention with Jordan Love. Mechanics, Trevor is 10th. And rushing ability, Trevor Lawrence is 10th. So do you have this list up in front of you, Skylar?
I do, yes.
Okay, so first things first, arm strength. Does he deserve to be honorable mention? Should he be on the list? What do you think?
I think he should be on the list. I mean, even just that, like, obviously this list was probably being worked on prior to the preseason games, but, I mean, even that one rip that Lawrence had to Gabe Davis just shows his arm strength. You know, he's able to throw it 70, 80 yards down the field if we need him to. I know Dan's got a pick, but at the bottom, he's got Baker Mayfield, Anthony Richardson, Dak Prescott, and Lamar Jackson. I would think Anthony Richardson he's got a strong enough arm to be on the list, but Baker Mayfield and Dak Prescott, they both have good arms, but I would think Trevor Lawrence could outthrow them any day. And then Lamar, he's got good arm too, but I would also think Lawrence could probably outthrow him in terms of distance. I mean, that's what arm strength is. So, I mean,
yeah,
he could throw. He could probably definitely throw a harder ball than those three guys I mentioned. Anthony Richardson probably has a stronger arm. I'll give him that, but yeah, he is at least honorable mention in that category. But
I mean,
I think he should be on the list.
Can we just bring back the Pro Bowl games where they have the throwing contests? You know, Brett Favre in a backwards hat, just throwing it as hard as he can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cordell Stewart. Yeah. The next one, ball placement. I'm okay with him not being on that. That's fine. Mechanics, he's 10th.
I do think he should be on ball placement, though. He puts the ball right where it needs to. I mean, you just talked about the clips that you saw where Calvin Ridley, like, dropped it or just didn't get his feet in play. I think he definitely is one of the top quarterbacks in terms of ball placement.
I think he's better than Josh Allen.
Oh yeah.
Who's 10th on this list?
Yeah, Josh Allen just throws it up and, you know, has guys that can.
Stephon Diggs just runs and go get it. Yeah.
But he's not there anymore, so.
Exactly. We'll see him go down on this list next year, then, right?
Yeah, and.
I just realized that he doesn't have Aaron Rodgers on this list. I know he didn't play last year, but Aaron Rodgers is arguably the best quarterback in the league for ball placement. Oh, I'm seeing here at the bottom. Picking between Allen and Rodgers at number 10 was a tough call, but I went with Allen, who has improved so much in this area. Okay, whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think
losing credibility.
Yeah, because, Yeah, I've seen some beautiful throws from Lawrence that I've never seen from other. Like, I've seen so many football games, you know, just here in Jacksonville. I've seen so many great quarterbacks, and like that game last year with the Chiefs and the Jaguars. Like, he made some incredible throws. There was three touchdowns that were negated because of toe drags or drops or something like that, and it's just the ball placement in that game was just phenomenal, in my opinion. And
yeah. Like, I think the biggest problem here is this is what happens with us Magic fans too. Dan Orlovsky wasn't watching Jaguar games last year, and he looked at the stats and he said, okay, let's see, Trevor Lawrence 2023, 65 completion percentage. Oh, he had 14 interceptions. Oh, he's not good enough to be any higher. So that's probably what it is. He saw the interceptions and said, no, I'm good.
And that's where, you know, decision making, he doesn't need to be anywhere on the list.
Yeah,
he's got Aaron Rodgers' number one decision making, which is interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, best decision maker, but doesn't know how to place the ball. Okay, whatever. The next one. So you say that one mechanics. You've got Trevor at 10th, and his quote here says, "My hardest call here was probably putting Lawrence at number 10. I almost put Geno Smith there, but Lawrence edged him out. Honestly, part of me wants to see Lawrence be a little less mechanical. He is so good in that department, but he could stand to play a little more free and have more of a recess style to his game at times."
So he's so mechanical that he's only number 10 in mechanics.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess he's thinking like, well, remember when Gardner Minshew was able to just kind of spin off the offensive lineman and stuff like that? He doesn't see Trevor doing that. I don't know. I don't know what he's seen or what it is, but 10th for mechanics, the decision making, we said that. Pocket presence, he's not on that list either. I mean,
I can understand that in terms of, like, because he has so many fumbles and stuff.
Yeah, I can't argue that one, so I'm going to move on. Rushing ability, he's 10th. His quote here, "Lawrence is a solid scrambler and designed ball carrier. But I want to see him do it more." Excuse me. He rushed 70 times last season. So I guess that kind of goes with that last point you just made is, yeah, we'll rush him more if he doesn't fumble more.
Yeah, but I feel like he's gotten better with his fumbles down the field. It's just still fumbles in the pocket. But again, on this list, he's got Kyler Murray 9 and Joe Burrow 8 when Joe Burrow's got they're both suffering from knee injuries, but Kyler Murray is also, Dak Prescott 7, but I would put Kyler Murray above. I'd put Kyler Murray above Patrick Mahomes, Dak, and Joe on this list.
Didn't Dak run for a 40-yard touchdown against us or whatever?
I mean, Dak's not immobile. I'm not saying that, but it's just like Kyler's.
Yeah.
Speedy kick and speed, like, cuts Kyler's game, besides being, like, smaller than the offensive line, you know?
Right.
The DBs can't even see it. They just see a ball flying out of the air. It's like, where'd that come from? You know, it's just past them.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is actually the first category I've seen Jalen Hurts in, which is interesting.
Yeah, that is.
You know, such a good quarterback.
I would think, he's a top quarterback for sure in the league. Put him up there in decision making.
Last on the list here is the second reaction ability. Trevor's not on here. I do see Minshew on here, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that goes hand in hand with like pocket presence, right? Just like not only knowing when to step up, but to be able to scramble away.
Yeah, and I immediately think of Aaron Rodgers with this, and he actually addresses it in the second paragraph. Though he doesn't make the list, the 40-year-old Rodgers used to be so good at this. Most quarterbacks exit the pocket to avoid bad situations. Rodgers used to do it to hurt you. And yes, yeah, that was one of my favorite things. When you let Rodgers out of the pocket, he's going to kill you with Jordy Nelson or Greg Jennings or whoever it may be out there.
Yeah, I think it's like extra 2 seconds to throw.
I think Trevor moves up this a little bit with some more, a better offensive line, which I think he has, but also better receivers. And I think that'll really help, because the better receivers are going to have smarter minds to be able to make the play to come back to him or get to a spot to where Trevor, as we know, has good looks to where to throw the ball. It's just maybe sometimes not getting it there. So maybe he just makes some better decisions, and Trevor's a little bit higher on this list next year. What do you think?
Yeah, I think decision making is probably the biggest thing he needs to work on, because too often we've seen situations where, you know, we're down inside the 5-yard line, he tries to squeeze it in, and it's like, no, and then it gets intercepted or whatever inside the end zone. Mm-hmm. So decision making for sure is one of my biggest things, and then pocket presence. It's not entirely his fault. His offensive line's not been great, but with that in mind, you know, he obviously knows he needs to get the ball out quick. And Jaguars last year was definitely one of the quicker teams in terms of just getting the ball out and into the flat.
Yep.
But yeah, the decision making will definitely put him up higher on the list, because he does make those throws. Hopefully we got the guys now that are going to catch the ball consistently. Well, I hope Kirk has a full healthy season, and Kirk's definitely the number one. So, you know, there's not going to be any issues about who we need to feed. We got Gabe Davis, who's just there when we need him, and he's a definitely solid receiver. He could definitely do everything that Zay Jones was doing, and maybe more, just because he's probably going to be more consistent.
Easily more consistent, yeah.
And then we got, you know, Brian Thomas is the wild card. He has the ability and build and athleticism to be as great and as incredible as any receiver, I mean, that we've ever had. I mean, the Jimmy Smith's obviously the best receiver that we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But the best receiver we've had, just like in terms of just like coming out of the gates, we've seen Justin Blackmon, and then we've seen now Robinson, and he's got the ability to be better than both those guys, because Justin couldn't stay in the game, you know, because of his off the field habits.
Right.
So I believe Brian's going to be such a great asset. He seems like a good guy, and the fact that he was already technically the number two receiver at LSU but put up numbers that were still tops amongst the country. He led the nation in touchdowns, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he did.
So to do that is phenomenal, you know. So I'm excited, if you couldn't tell.
Well, I think we all have reason to be excited. A little cautioned excitement, if you will. I expect us to do big things this year. We've got a good division that will challenge us, and a good schedule as well, which I think next episode we should probably focused on that. We haven't done our schedule review as we typically, or preview, I should say.
Yeah.
We haven't done that yet. So I think that'll be our next episode there. So there's your Jaguars talk. I think we're ready for the season to start. I speak for both of us on that, and I'm sure Mike as well. Football is back soon, and we can taste it. So, go ahead.
Joint practice. Sorry, yeah, I was just excited about mentioning too that I'm going to the practice tomorrow with the Bucks and the Jags.
Ooh, take just picks.
Completely forgot about that.
Yeah, take picks.
I'm gonna see Kyle Trask, the UF legend, robbed of a Heisman.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I will say that if you guys didn't see already that Dougie said that the starters most likely will not be playing in this game against the Buccaneers because of these joint practices. So if you're looking to go to the game, don't expect to see Trevor out there because he most likely will not be. But anyway, so let's
move. Yeah, game number 3 is in Atlanta, so short little drive.
Actually, yeah, it's really not bad. I do appreciate when they do that with the preseason.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, all right, last segment here. Yes, last segment here. I know some of you are going to turn it off right now, but for those of you that stick around, I think you should hear this because this is interesting. So our last segment, is about NASCAR. So specifically, we are going to be talking about the NASCAR Cup Series race at Richmond that took place on Sunday. There was a driver that needed to win the race, and he was leading the last 50 or so laps and was looking to cruise to a victory when there was a caution flag thrown for a silly wreck that should never have happened. Good old wrecky spin house, right? And so that resets the field, and they go into what's called overtime, where they have one green flag lap, one white flag lap, which is signifying the last lap, and then the checkered flag. So the driver that was supposed to win this race, or was poised to win this race, was Austin Dillon, who drives the number 3 car that was made famous by Dale Earnhardt. He went on the restart. You can restart in a certain zone, and he didn't accelerate to the very last moment, which was stupid. And Joey Logano, who started on the outside of the same row as him, accelerated just as soon as he did. And Logano is known for having really good restarts. Restarts fantastic, gets the edge, is pulling away, is at least 3 car lengths in front of Austin Dillon on that last lap. And Austin Dillon ends up, we'll just say, speeds through the turn, plows into the back of the 22 car of Joey Logano, spins him out, comes around the corner of turn 4, and inadvertently, takes out the 11 car of Denny Hamlin, who was in 3rd place, who was about to go get the win himself, wrecks him, and then he wins the race. And the significance of this is that Austin Dillon was like 32nd in points. This is his first win since 2022. And now he's in the playoffs because of it. So go ahead, Skyler. Give me your first impressions of what transpired.
Well, I mean, you probably watched more of the race than I did.
I did. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah. So that's definitely... how many laps is that race?
Oh, it's 400. 400 laps, yeah.
So you watched 402 laps and I watched 0, but I saw the I saw one lap. I saw the final lap, and that's all I need to see. But I think that video I sent you with Kevin Harvick kind of sums it up perfectly. But Kevin Harvick basically says you had a driver, like you mentioned, 32nd in points, desperate for a win, needing to get into the playoffs, and he did what he thought he needed to do to win. And like, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that I don't really have, like, too much of a shock when it comes to, you know, you got a guy who's already had a win this year, and then Hamlin's got multiple wins this year. And Logano's definitely a better racer. Like, Dillon has no right driving the 3 car. I hate seeing the 3 car being driven by someone.
Same.
That's good. And so, like, I'm not like a Dillon fan, but
For those of you that don't know, think of like Thanasis Antetokounmpo in the NBA, how he's kind of like a Nepo baby. Like he shouldn't be there. He's only there because of Giannis. Austin Dillon's really only in this ride because of his grandpa owning the team. So go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. He's Pop Pop.
Yeah, Pop Pop. I'm sorry. Pop Pop's proud of you. I'm not proud of you.
But it's like, I'm not too shocked. And honestly, like, I kind of don't mind it at short tracks. If this were to happen at Talladega, then I have a huge problem, because then lives are truly, truly at risk. Like, there's so much safety protocols. Like, I don't think, when you say he plowed into the rear of Logano, I think that's a little over the top. Like,
I mean, he punted him. That's the better way to put it.
I didn't see any rear damage on Logano after Dylan.
These new cars are bricks, though.
And that's where Logano maybe not used to handling being bumped on the last lap in a turn, because Logano is faster usually, and he is usually pulling away.
He was three car lengths ahead of him going into the turn.
Yeah, that's where I'm wondering, do you think he slowed down going into that turn thinking he had an easy win as well?
And no, no.
Dylan went through that. Like, you can't take your foot off the throttle.
No, you do at a short track when you have, if you want to make the turn.
Well, see, then you take the high side, you let Dylan crash into the wall, and you win. You know.
So you didn't watch the whole race. He didn't take the high line. He took the line that he'd been taking for the most part of the race. Dylan was three car lengths behind and did not take the braking pattern that he had been taking the entire race. I went on like a whole like Twitter deep dive of like people's analysis, and they have the analysis of his in-car like system. He did not brake properly, so he was going fast. The radio broadcast was literally telling him go, go, go. After he spins Logano, his crew chief or spotter or whoever literally says wreck him when Denny Hamlin's coming underneath him, which Denny Hamlin did not take the incorrect line. He was actually under the regular pattern of cars going around the track for the race, and Dylan still comes down. You can actually see his gloves turn the wheel left, and Austin Dylan can deny it all he wants, because you sent me that clip from Dale Jr.'s podcast where he's denying it. Well, Dale Jr. did not buy it, but Austin Dylan literally went on after the race, gets out of his car and does the interview, and literally said, I had to do that to win. It's ridiculous that the way, or what did he say? I hate to do that, but sometimes you just have it. You just got to have it. And he's praising God and thanking him, and he wrecked two guys to win a race.
That's where my point. Like, I'm not spending, like I said, Dylan's not a great driver, but he was in a scenario where you had two guys already in. You have to do what you need to do to get in. And like, if it's at Talladega where these guys could die, I'm not cheering that on. But if it's like Bristol, Martinsville, you bump the guy, get him out of the way. I'm not saying you have to it's hard to say I want them to wreck each other. I don't want that, but
a bump and run is fine. A bump and run is fine. What he did to Joey Logano, I actually don't have any problem with. It's hitting the right rear of Denny Hamlin, and if Denny wasn't a skilled driver and saved that car, he could have punted him headfirst into the car, and we could have had another Kurt Busch where, you know, he never races again. That's where I have the issue with what Austin Dillon did. He wanted to win the race. I get that. But he could have seriously injured someone, and I think he should be fined or penalized or something in some way. They won't take the race away, and I don't think they should take the race away. He still won it according to NASCAR's rules. But that's where we get to the point of, you know, where they say don't hate the player, hate the game. You know, we have all of these unwritten rules in baseball, and people hate when players pimp home runs and do this, and so they plunk him the next time he comes up to bat. Well, don't expect Joey Logano or Denny Hamlin or even Tyler Reddick and Bubba Wallace were pissed too. Everyone was pissed at him for this. Don't expect them not to want to retaliate in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. Because NASCAR has turned into an entertainment hub and has gotten so far away from just being a sport that they're not realizing that they're losing their longtime fans because They're focusing on wrecks and drama instead of a quality product on the track. Those tires that they used for this race, they had a special tire that they used, was awesome. We watched, well, you didn't watch. I watched Daniel Suarez put on these new tires and drive through the entire field and win stage two. It was awesome. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see Austin Dillon. I mean, did I freak out? Was I like jumping up and down? Like, holy crap, that just happened? Absolutely, I was. But that's not what I want to see in a race.
Yeah, well, and that, you know, that goes back to the point of like Austin being the Nepo baby. Like, if we had good quality racers, you wouldn't see that. But you have a racer desperate to get in, and that's the only thing he could think of to do because that's the only thing he's capable of doing. You know, so.
Well, remember, like, 2 years ago, there used to be a rule that if you weren't in the top 30 in points and you won a race, you still wouldn't be in. They got rid of that rule. Why did they get rid of that rule?
Oh, okay. Well, because I thought that's where, like, yeah, because it was like you had to win a race, right? Now it's just you win a race.
Yep, you could be 57th in points and, you know, well, okay, I guess not really because that would be Shane Van Gisbergen, but you got to be a full-time driver and be anywhere in the point standings, and you're in.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where it's like, yeah, I think NASCAR needs to look at the system because Kevin Harvick explained it that way too. It's like the system messed up. If you didn't have a system like that, you would have Austin wouldn't be trying so hard to win. He wouldn't be like wrecking equipment that costs money. Like, there's people that still have to pay for this equipment. I mean, obviously these teams have so much money nowadays, but it's, yeah I mean, so if NASCAR wants that to change, they need to make a change to how the playoffs are set up.
I think this is the biggest case that they have to change that rule because nobody cares if Michael McDowell goes out and wins the Daytona 500 and gets in the playoffs, whatever, that's fine. But when crap like this happens, I think that's when you need to step back and say, whoa, is this the product we really want? Are we the biggest motorsport sport in the U.S., or are we just a clown show? And right now, after that event, they look like a clown show. So that's just my rant. I know I kind of talked a lot, but I really wanted to get that off my chest because it's been really interesting just looking at the media about this. I follow a lot of guys on Twitter, and a lot of people have different takes on it, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, honestly, though, like, for me, like you said, bump and runs are good. Like, I would love to see tracks like Bristol, Richmond, Martinsville, like, have almost not, like, maybe have, like, maybe there's a period of, like, points and times where they can be extra aggressive, but if, like, where F1, you know, you can't really block a person. You have to, like, let them pass if they're
faster. We don't want that. Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah, so, like, that's where, like, we don't want that, but we also don't want the super aggressiveness. But, like, maybe there's something along the lines of where, like, they have a set period of laps where the extra aggression is to be expected on short tracks. Like they're going to bump you and nudge you and maybe wreck you a little bit, but at the same time, you have that ability to kind of do the same. But
well, I think what you're referencing is what old NASCAR was, and I don't want to go too deep into this because we are short on time, but let me just end with this. People loved Dale Earnhardt. They thought Dale was the king, the intimidator, whatever. He wasn't the king. He was the intimidator. Richard Petty was the king. But, you know, they people in comments all over have just been talking about, oh, well, if Dale did that, it'd be... No. Dale dumped Terry Labonte at Bristol, a short track, many years ago, and he actually got booed for it. The fans hated it. He actually did the same thing to Darrell Waltrip in another race and actually got penalized for reckless driving. So don't give me the crap that this is, you know, old NASCAR, you know, wreck 'em racing, you know, whatever. No, I remember specifically an instance where Rusty Wallace was pissed at Jeff Gordon for bump and running him. And remember, there was a lot of guys that didn't like the bump and run move. I like the bump and run more than flat out wrecking people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you wreck people. Like, I just want to see people nudging, going back and forth, like, where, you know, it's like, I like the contact, but, like, like, I love seeing the drag races to the end where they're door to door stuff. Like,
well,
that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like, I want to see that. I don't want to see people wreck, like, and then just like stroll away. Like, this week was wild. Like you said, the bump on Logano wasn't too much. The issue with Hamlin, that's a different story. But you have Dylan, who's inexperienced in those situations, versus Logano and Hamlin, who are both very experienced at being in the front. Hamlin's already got 2 wins this year and like 3 top 2s, second place finishes or something like that.
Probably, yeah.
So, I mean, that's where these guys are super, super experienced and obviously handle it well. And yeah, there's been situations where, like, you know, we've seen Keselowski crash like Carl Edwards out at Talladega, and that like flips his car out. Like, that's where it gets dangerous. Like, you can't
the other way around. Yeah. Well, actually, both happened. They both did it to each other.
Yeah.
So that was the boys have at it phase. Yeah. We don't want to go back to that. So let's just go ahead and put a bow on this, because yes, you and I could talk NASCAR all day, and I appreciate you humoring me with this. But let's go ahead and finish this episode. It would not be an episode without Nerdy Nuts, though. I do want to mention them real quick. It is hurricane season. We are very lucky that Tropical Storm Ernesto does not seem to be coming towards Jacksonville. It looks like it will just head out to the Atlantic. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't have your hurricane preparations ready. You should have a radio, a flashlight, you know, maybe some batteries for whatever you might need. But don't forget the snacks. And Nerdy Nuts is the perfect snack for hurricane season. The Handmade Small Batch Peanut Butter Company is just out of this world. Their latest drop this past Sunday was Big Apple Cheesecake, Kitchen Sink, Ultimate Peanut Butter Cheesecake, Fruity Nibbles, which is a play on Fruity Pebbles, S'mores Dirt Cup, Bookworm, I don't know what that one is, Fried Cookie, Buckeye Brownie, and Cotton Candy Cream. Yes, you heard that right. Cotton Candy Cream. These are all peanut butter flavors that just got released this past Sunday. They release new flavors every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get yourself some Nerdy Nuts with our promo code DIMES10, and you will receive 10% off your purchase. I just purchased some of the oatmeal cream pie that they had last week. I couldn't resist. That's one of my favorites because I love the oats that are in there. Pairs perfectly with apples, but you can put crackers, cookies, whatever other fruit you like in there, or just eat it by the spoonful. So that's Nerdy Nuts. Again, use promo code DIMES10 to get 10% off your purchase. Skyler, I appreciate you calling in. I'm glad we were able to get this episode on the books. We're sitting close to an hour on this episode, so this is good. This is what we need. We need to get back into the groove. We'll have Mike on hopefully next week, and we'll get back into the swing of things. How about that?
Sounds great. Appreciate it.
Cool. For this episode of Dimes on Duval, presented by Nerdy Nuts, I'm Keith Manzi. He's Skyler Chase, and we'll catch you on the next one.